Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for sticking around for the last research presentation of this particular block. My name is Gordon Getty, and I'm going to be talking with you about Gaylord Perry's 1978 National League Cy Young season, and it's a great follow-up to what Gary was just talking about with the 1978 Padres giving us an overview of the season. Hope you're enjoying the early stages of the conference, and I want to also thank the research presentation committee and everybody else who has a hand in putting on together these conferences. It's great to see so many people getting together and talking about baseball. One of the things that I love about being a baseball fan is that baseball's rich history allows us to entertain a lot of what-ifs. So what if we could see Lou Gehrig face Justin Verlander? What if I could pencil in the lineup for the 1955 Dodgers? Or what if I had a hand in voting in postseason awards back in the 60s and the 70s? So that was my take on this. How would I vote? And what would I do? So the research objective that I have for this particular study and a lot of other underlying research that I've done is how do we effectively combine traditional with newer statistics and understand their historical performance to better assess their performance. So specifically, I was looking at Gaylord Perry as a case study. So Perry was the overwhelming winner of the National League Cy Young in 1978. He did a wonderful job throughout the season, which I'll get into some of the details about. But I also have a personal interest. So my parents bought me Baseball Digest as a kid, and the very first issue that I received just a couple days after Christmas was the January 1979 issue, and inside Gaylord Perry had been featured in two different articles. One was that he was the closest active pitcher to 300 wins at the end of the 1978 season, and also they talked about the Cy Young Award. And then also my very first 1962 Topps baseball card was courtesy of my wife Lisa, who picked that out for me a couple of years ago. So here's the lineup. I'm going to talk about first about Perry's season performance. Then get into some details about the Cy Young Award voting. Look at some of the other factors that might have contributed to his landslide victory, because he won the majority of the votes, and the records, the way we traditionally have talked about statistics, certainly lend themselves to that. But then when you start to look at some of the statistics that we talk about now, such as wins above replacements, such as fielding independent pitching, all of a sudden the tables start to turn a little bit. So how do we combine that data, and how do we understand its content and its context? And that's what I'll end up on. So I don't really need to talk a whole lot about the 1978 background since we just heard about it. But the biggest thing from Gaylord Perry's point of view was that he was a veteran pitcher. He was looking for another job. The Padres desperately needed pitching, as we've heard. Randy Jones wasn't completely back. But a lot of great hitting that was in the lineup, but not as great pitching. So Perry came on board in late January. So first, to talk about his season performance. These are some of the highlights from his season. So on January 25th, he was traded to San Diego from Texas. April 21st, he gets his first win. And the neat thing about that was not only did he earn his first win, but he also hit two doubles, scored two runs. So was good on both sides of the plate. In a particular stretch in June, as the Padres were starting to heat up, he threw two shutouts, both of them four hitters, once against Montreal and one against Houston. On August 21st, he won his 15th win for the 13th consecutive season, which is something that's pretty remarkable and something that it get a little bit of press when he actually accomplished the feat. Since that time, it's been overshadowed by other things. In late September, he really heated up. He was incredible during the month of September and October. And September 21st is when he earned his 20th win. And then on December 26th, when the Padres clinched their winning record for the first time in franchise history, as Gary had mentioned, he earned his 21st win, and he hit his 21st win. Then a neat thing happened a couple days later on October 1st when he started the season finale for the Padres. He pitched 10 innings. The game actually went 11 innings, so he didn't factor into the decision. But during that time, he earned his 3,000th career strikeout. And at the time, he was the third pitcher in baseball history to attain that vaunted milestone. And then in October, later on that month, he won his second Cy Young Award. So this is a breakdown of his stats per month, and one of the things that I want to call your attention to is the very bottom row that's highlighted that talks about September and October. So during those 2 months, or during that month, he was 6-0 with a 1.32 ERA. He pitched 54 innings. It was the most innings that he pitched all season long, and he was clearly the most effective all season long was during that last month as the Padres were ramping up. The other thing that was interesting was his strikeout-to-walk ratio was great that month. I mean, he had great control that month, especially compared to some of the earlier months as well. So that part we'll come back to in a little bit later. This particular table looks at his best performances by Bill James' game score. So these are the top 10 games that he had. What's really interesting about it is that he had four of the six best games that he pitched were in that month of September, and aside from the two four-hit shutouts that he threw back in June. So it was really neat to see that how some of the early outings that he had, he didn't pitch as effectively, but then he started to pick up steam as the year progressed. So how did the Cy Young Award voting occur in that particular season? So these are the National League Cy Young contenders. So these are their representations on the 1978 Topps baseball cards. On the top row, Ross Grimsley was the April National League Pitcher of the Month. In May, it was Bob Knepper, who's not listed because he kind of fell off the table. Vida Blue won in June. J.L. Richard won in July. Kent Tekulve won in August. And Gaylord Perry won in September. In the bottom row, Bert Hooten and Tommy John were perennial contenders. They were really good during the mid-70s, and of course, Dodger Stadium was considered a favorable pitcher's park. Phil Niekro, who was really, he was an innings eater, and he pitched the Braves. He pitched in, he was the workhorse for the Braves in the mid-70s. There's no doubt about it, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. And of course, by this time, it was nice to see some relievers starting to get some attention in Cy Young Award voting as Fingers and a rookie, Don Robinson, started to show up on the national stage. So this is how the National League Cy Young Award voting fared that particular year. So Gaylord Perry won 22 of 24 votes. If you got a first place vote, you get 5 points. Second place vote was 3 points, and a third place vote was 1 point. You total that up, and Gaylord Perry won by a landslide, 116-38 over Bert Hooten. Vida Blue finished third, and of course, J.R. Richard finished fourth, and you can see everybody else sort of bunched up there. So these are traditional stats. This is how we normally would look at it. And in the 1978 season, at the end of the season, the baseball writers would look at these stats to do their evaluation along with some of the subjective data that they had. And the numbers that you see in boldface were the league-leading statistic for that league-leading number for that particular statistic. So you can see Perry was 21-6 with a 2.73 ERA, led the National League in wins with 21. ERA was interesting. Greg Swan from the Mets had a 2.43 ERA but didn't earn a single Cy Young vote that particular year. Games to Colby, that's where you started to see relievers really start to go out there, and they were pitching almost every other day, if not every other day, and he led with 91 games. Niekro easily led the league with 22 complete games and 334 innings. Can't even imagine a pitcher coming close to 300 innings in today's day and age. Also, of course, led because of the volume of innings, he also led the league in hits and runs. J.R. Richard, who we know had incredible speed, incredible wildness as well at times early in his career, led the league in walks and strikeouts. So if we move a little step forward, and we know about the traditional stats, and Gaylord Perry looks like he won pretty well. He can make a case for it. When we start to look at some of the newer stats, all of a sudden things start to come in question a little bit. So we've got two values for wins above replacement up there. One is in parentheses in BR is Baseball Reference, and in parentheses in FG is Fangraphs. And on their website, they distinguish between the two. So Baseball Reference does not incorporate fielding as much as Fangraphs does. So you can see that Niekro had a much greater wins above replacement value than Perry did, and really anybody else in the National League that year. He did so as calculated by Baseball Reference and as calculated by Fangraphs. ERA plus. He was right at the league leaders. Greg Swan was just ahead of him with a 143 ERA plus. Field independent pitching, you can see, was J.R. Richard, which was interesting. Being in the Astrodome, he gave in addition to the Astrodome providing a good area for defense, he also had a good defense behind him. And then when it came to strikeouts per nine innings, J.R. Richard led in that as well. And in BABIP, batting average for balls put in play, Bert Hooten from the Dodgers was the person who led. So no clear-cut winner unless you end up looking at just a single stat, unless you just rely on wins above replacement. So you have the two. How do you have these two guys score off against one another? Because Perry is the one that had led in traditional stats, and Negro is the one that led in some of the newer stats. So you've got Perry on the one hand, who won 21 games, had an incredible September where he goes 6-0. And then you've got Negro, who is incredible with his wins above replacement, clearly leads the league in that. Perry had a 2.73 ERA, but Negro had a 142 ERA plus. So if you start to look at some of the, how you take into account some park effects and things like that, all of a sudden Negro starts to look a little bit better. Perry was known to pitch in a pitcher's park, and Negro pitched more in a hitter's park. Perry pitched for a better team. Negro pitched for a team that struggled a little bit more. So how do you come up with these two things? How do you rectify these two things? In addition, Vita Blue was really a strong contender early on in the 1978 season. Through early August, he was 16-4 with a 2.45 ERA. That year, he had moved across the bay from Oakland to San Francisco. And one of the things that was interesting throughout my research was that Blue was the first one to become the Sporting News Pitcher of the Year to win in both leagues. So he won in 71 with Oakland, and he also won in 78 with San Francisco. In fact, during 1978, he was actually the leading individual vote-getter with 166 votes. Now, what was particularly interesting about this piece is that the Sporting News Pitcher of the Year award was voted on by the players, by the National League players. So the Sporting News would send out a survey to all the players. They received 199 responses, and at the time, they could vote for one of 10 positions, so the eight typical defensive positions, and then a right-handed pitcher and a left-handed pitcher. So Blue was the leading vote-getter overall, as well as obviously for the left-handed pitcher, and Perry was the leading pitcher for the right-handed pitcher. The votes were tallied in early September before Perry went on his big tear and before Blue started to struggle as the end of the 1978 season progressed. So what were some of the other factors that contributed to Perry winning the Cy Young Award? Well, part of it has to do with human nature. In the human judgment literature, there is a lot of scientific literature that looks at heuristics and biases, and this is just a snapshot of them, but we as humans, we are prone to limited attention. So we only have so much attention, we can only take in so much information. So what's the information we're going to pay attention to? It's usually the information you receive first when you're looking at a problem, or the information you see last, or it's the piece of information that is the loudest. So whether it's loudest in volume, or the brightest on a screen, or the number that's the largest. Those are the numbers that tend to stick in our heads. We also have an over-reliance on information that may or may not be pertinent to the situation. We're not very good at discerning some of that. And we also have a confirmational bias, and we have where we look for information that supports our ideas. And we also get fixated on certain topics. So as the end of the year progressed, and Perry was making a big splash toward the end of the season, he was starting to get more and more press, and it would start to come together as far as a lot of people starting to think that, okay, this is our guy for the Cy Young Award. So why did Perry win? The traditional stats suggest that he was a clear front runner for it. But we start to look at some of the newer stats, it was more Negro. Perry certainly led the league with 21 wins, and as I mentioned, he was selected as the pitcher of the month in September when he had a 6-0 record. He also finished second in the Sporting News Comeback Player of the Year award to Willie Stargell, which was something that I didn't realize until starting to dive into this topic. The other piece that I think was interesting was the career achievements that he attained toward the end of his 1978 season. So the fact that he recorded his 3,000th strikeout at the end of the regular season really stuck in people's minds. I mean, here's a 20-game winner. Here's somebody who hit 3,000 strikeout, the 3,000 strikeout milestone, and he was only the third pitcher to do that. At the end of the 1978 season, he had won 267 games, and he was the leading active career win leader at the end of the season. He also joined Carl Mays and Doyle Alexander as third pitcher to win 20 games for three different teams. He also may have been overlooked for the 1974 American League Cy Young Award, which I'm going to get to on the next slide. And another piece that was interesting in the newspapers, especially in the late August and early September time frame, they started talking about his age. In fact, it was even referenced earlier today, where Gaylor Perry turned 40, and it just started to become a number, and how he dedicated his Cy Young Award to all the 40-year-olds out there. So it was a nice round number to go along with 3,000 wins and hitting the 3,000 strikeouts and hitting the 20-win plateau. The other piece that you would start to see in the newspapers in early September, and you started to see more and more as time wore on, it wasn't just in San Diego and L.A., but it was across the country, was this notion that Perry could be the first person to win the Major League Cy Young Award in both leagues. It hadn't been accomplished before. And this is the first time that could possibly happen. And then, of course, as Gary alluded to in the previous presentation, we had the Padres finished first, had a winning record for the first time in franchise history. So I'm going to go back to the 1974 American League Cy Young Award voting for just a second. So I know it had been 4 years before the 1978 season, and of course Perry had switched leagues in the meantime. Catfish Hunter won, soundly defeating Fergie Jenkins. Gaylor Perry received one first place vote, three third place votes, finished fourth in the voting. Okay. Well, what's interesting is when we look at some of the stats, if we use war, if we use war as an argument against Perry winning in 1978, then we have to consider using war as the reason why Perry should have won in 1974, because his war was higher than anybody else's for baseball reference. Now, Fangraphs does not have the same value for baseball for wins above replacement, which is something that I'm starting to dig into a little bit more. But Perry did not lead the league in wins. He didn't lead in ERA. He didn't lead in strikeouts or walks. But yet, according to baseball reference, he had the highest wins above replacement. And he also had he led the league with 144 ERA plus. So how do we combine these seemingly conflicting information? So one of the things that I think we need to do as a community, I think we're the perfect organization to look at this, is how do we evaluate previous award selections based on performance measures but understand their historical context? So when I was going through a lot of the research, I saw a lot of articles that were titled Biggest Cy Young Snubs in History, and Phil Niekro getting snubbed in favor of Gaylor Perry in 1978 was typical among them. And usually the articles would say, okay, Niekro had a higher war, Niekro pitched more innings, Niekro pitched in a worse park for pitchers. But that was really as far as it went. It didn't go any further than that. Well, I think we need to dive into a little bit deeper into some of the statistics that are out there. So what if Niekro had reached the same career milestones as Perry? How much did 3,000 strikeouts and 21 wins and hitting age 40 worked in Perry's favor? The other piece is to how do we look at our statistics so that we could actually look at different parts of the season to see if they're more impactful. So Perry had 21 wins and Niekro had 19 wins, and I know there's a question about how valuable wins are in the season, but just wins as an example statistic here. Should we look at weighting statistics more heavily in the second half of the season when it comes to postseason awards, or should we look at it throughout the season? If so, how do we do that? How do we adjust the weighting to do that accordingly? So in conclusion, one of the things that we need to do as a society for next steps is develop qualitative and quantitative methods to effectively combine traditional and newer statistics and understand the historical context to give a broader picture of what was going on. We can't just say Niekro had 10 WAR in 1978 and should have won the National League Cy Young Award. We need to look at a little bit more in depth of what was going on. We also need to look at how word selections are based on data from disparate sources. It's very easy to look at the numbers because it's objective data and it's something that we all have insight into, but a lot of times we don't have that insight into some of the subjective data that's available. So related to that, timing matters and historical context matters. Had Perry not had such a great win, had such a great September where he went 6-0 in September, would he have been considered a front runner for the National League Cy Young? If a 6-0 record happened in April, would it have mattered as much? You know, in the final game of the 1978 season, if Perry would have ended the season with 2,998 strikeouts instead of 3,000 strikeouts, would that have made a difference? The fact that he hit those nice round numbers might have mattered. So one of the things that we need to look at with our statistics, we need to look at some of the timing, and we also need to look at some of the historical context. And that concludes the presentation. Any questions? Yes. Yes.
Did we get a touch on that at all? Was there much speculation at the time?
So, great question. How much did illegal pitches potentially influence the award selection? So, the newspapers did talk about it a little bit, but not a whole lot. And when they did, it was, oh, look, he throws the spitball. It's this really quaint type of pitch. It was never, oh, well, this is an illegal pitch and it should be banned. So, it was a very interesting perspective on that. Yes.
If he didn't win the Cy Young in 74, when did he win?
72.
Okay, did we look at that season at all?
Not for this particular study. Great point. Yes. I'm sorry?
He did or did not ever throw the speedball.
So he wrote a book called Me and My Spitter, and I encourage you to take a look at that book.
The one thing that leaps out from your chart is Perry had only 5 complete games, which was considerably less than all the competition.
Yes.
Is there any story behind that?
There was. Part of it was they didn't want to tire him out during the summer months. And then what was interesting was he threw more complete games later in the year. So he threw 2 complete games during September, but not as much during the summer.
From your research, did you see anyone specifically saying that was why they were taking him out? Or?
There were some articles in the San Diego Union-Tribune with Manager Craig, that mentioned that. There was a July, I don't remember the exact date, but there was one in July. Yes.
So one of the new analytic statistics is how often a pitcher throws a certain pitch. Is there a way of reconstructing how often you do these pitfalls?
I would love to see that data. I'm not aware of it. That is a great question. I don't know if the video that Major League Baseball has available can look at that or not. Great question.
One of the reasons he might not have as many complete games is because of fingers.
No, good. Great point. Great point. Fingers did have a lot of saves that year. Absolutely. Yes.
Question. So in your conclusion, you talk about developing, I'm using your words because they're probably better than mine, developing qualitative and quantitative methods to effectively combine traditional with newer statistics with a historical context. I was wondering, have you read anything or would you have, just for somebody who's interested in that kind of stuff, have you read anything or heard of any interesting theories about how to do that or have any recommendations to read about?
I can definitely, if you want to email me, I can share with you a lot of references. One of the challenges is looking at, so combining objective and subjective data isn't something that's strictly unique to baseball. So there's a lot, especially within the data analytics piece, so there has been a lot more emphasis on that, and how do we integrate those information over the last 5 years. I can certainly shoot you off some references.
Awesome, thank you.
Welcome.
Great presentation.
Thank you.
One comment, two questions, if that's okay. One comment is, I think, given how important wins and losses were in 78, the fact that he won 21 games, he led the league in wins, and Nico led the league in losses, meant that Nico had no chance, and that Perry was the most obvious choice for writers. In terms of questions, too, one, in 74, I don't think you put in the Babbitt.
No, I did not.
Which would be interesting, because the reason that the Fangraph Wars would be two wins less than Baseball Reference is probably because Baseball Reference uses runs allowed, whereas Fangraph uses FIPS. So the Babbitt would probably help show whether it's a combination. Could be that he had, for just luck, he had a lot less, a lower batting average than you would expect for an amount of contact.
Okay.
Or it could be that the Padres had a much better defense than average. Say Templeton being a shortstop, and therefore that might explain the gap between the two WAR.
Check that out.
And then the last question is, it'd be interesting to go back. I don't know if you went back and looked. The fact that Vida Blue actually won the Sporting News vote by the players, I wonder how much of that would be because the players would view Perry as being a cheater. And Nico has been a trick pitcher, whereas for them, Vida Blue would have been the real pitcher and therefore more deserving.
That is great speculation, and it was funny. I actually found relatively little information on that on the Sporting News. There basically were a couple of articles in the Sporting News, and that was really all I found on it. So I didn't see anything about the reasoning behind some of the votes, but that's great, great conjecture.
Thank you.
Yes. Illegal activities in baseball are, they have a rich history.
I think that a very interesting presentation. The recency bias is very important and probably overlooked, right? So when someone, not just Perry, has a strong second half or strong close to the season, that's going to have a much more impact. It's going to be recency bias on the voters than somebody had a strong first half. And that might be something that could be looked into broader in all of these. I mean, you brought it up, you mentioned it, right? But it maybe should be quantified somehow, right, that we do this.
Absolutely. Great point. Yes. Great point. It would be interesting because, in the 70s, it was basically this week in baseball and, more print journalism than TV. Cool. Yes?
One question I would have is kind of going back to your contextualization. Back in 1978 and 1974, you didn't have advanced statistics like WAR. And so we haven't really have appreciated the fact that a guy like Phil Negro was as good as he was, as other people pointed out, with the record that he had, even acknowledging that he played for a very bad team. I think that acknowledgement would probably have been baked in there. But how good he really was, there may have been really no way for people to assess that in the absence of the
absolutely, and it's interesting looking at you applying more current day statistics to historical performances because of that very nature. It's people didn't have access to this type of information; they didn't look at things that way. It's easy to look at history with a 2020 perspective.
Yeah, I guess my final thing I was saying about that is it's a useful thing to do in terms of objective analysis of what happened. So sure that it's actually kind of fair to use what we are now able to measure to say that so-and-so didn't deserve it, back in 1959 or whatever the year might be in question.
Right. Agreed.
Yes. Just an observation. I get to Arizona for spring training pretty regularly in my later years, and he is always at the Giants home game.
Oh, cool.
And interesting, neither of his Cy Youngs Giants, but that seems to be his identity is with the Giants.
Yes, and actually his Cy Young trophy, that award trophy that I had up on the last slide, was the had just been auctioned off earlier this year, along with some Giants memorabilia. So, cool. Any other questions? Thank you for your time.